Midnight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be.
Sorry.
She is Karen Frazier. Yes, she's back, ladies and gentlemen. Can't you tell? I am Rick Hale. Joining us also tonight is a special third wheel, is going to be Paranormal Underground science editor, J.D. Harrison. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, okay, are we in fact online right now?
We actually are, and I've got to tell you, it's always really entertaining when we have our guest on, because I don't think we have ever not had technical difficulties when Jason Haxton has joined us. And Jason is, of course, as you know, if you've ever listened to our show before or watched last Wednesday's Paranormal Witness, Jason is the, I don't want to say owner because I don't think anybody owns it, the caretaker of the Dybbuk box. Jason Haxton, we're on the air.
Hey, that's really cool. And, you know, this always happens. Don't feel special, because almost any podcast, whether it be MU or Whitley Strieber or whoever, they're always either their eyes are bleeding or something midway through. Right, JD?
How dare it do that to Whitley Strieber?
So I have my holy water, and I'm sitting in the room where I make my rosaries and malas. So I'm sitting in that room. I'm pretty sure that JD is wearing his tinfoil hat. Are you not?
Maybe.
And of course,
if I say yes, does that constitute mocking the box?
No, that's okay. No. You can wear a tinfoil hat. And I think that Rick ran out and got his disaster and first aid kit. Well, just in case.
You know what, though? Because, you know, we were talking about this before the air, and I'm not kidding you. This is not to, like, you know, to be fake and everything. The first time we ever had Jason on, I'm not kidding you, I sat here in this same exact chair that I'm sitting in right now, and my eyes were burning. It was the weirdest thing I've ever experienced, and I've experienced some pretty weird things. That was definitely the weirdest. So, by the way, Jason, thank you. You know,
I do want to give you fair warning. About a week and a half or so, maybe 2 weeks ago, we did a show with the guys brand new going kind of live big time. And actually, it was in Portland, so Kevin Manis showed up, and there is actually a second box that we've never really put a lot of spiritual faith in. But he went ahead and took it and opened it on the set. The producer ended up with blisters on his hands and feet and nauseous and had to go home.
Shut the front door. Are you serious?
Is that the replica?
It was actually, no, it's a second box that's kind of a sister box to the real Dybbuk box. And the cameraman basically, he's kind of a ginger, ended up like with almost burns
no
down.
Soul his, so he has no soul? Is
he has no
saying?
Soul anyway. He's a ginger, but all of a sudden down his neck and back, it's as if someone just burned him with an iron during the show. All there online, exactly. And you can go, if you want to go, just look at Ground Zero with Clyde. Everything that happened to you just now happened at once. The police were coming up because it's a 20-story building, and they lost all communication. And they warned them that something might happen, so the police wanted to know what did they do and to undo it now that they had no communications. The room had the air conditioner blowing on full, but the room was heating up as if it was hell itself. And so everything was going bad. People were basically running through with their eyes tearing up and blind, and it was, I mean, and the guy's videotaping all this, and it's like I said, I warned you not to do this. He goes, oh my gosh, it's complete, you know, havoc here, I can't believe it. And then kind of he closes down and goes, it's my best show ever.
Okay, you know what though? Okay, with that being said, for those of our listeners who don't know what the Dybbuk box is, and I'm sure that everybody in the known universe knows what it is, why don't you just introduce what this thing is that causes such chaos and havoc and it's just all kinds of bad things?
So, Jason, first I have to ask, do you prefer caretaker or is owner?
No, I don't own. Nobody owns the Dybbuk box. You caretake it.
You are the Dybbuk box's. Okay.
It owns you.
The master of Dybbuk Bok's lore is now is my grand title. People are like, yes, the lore of the Dybbuk Bok, the master, the doctor of Dybbuk Bok. So it's like,
the doctor of Dybbuk, I like it.
Doctor of Dybbuk. Of course, even as I speak, I'm kind of nervous because...
You should just go with trance DJ of the Dybbuk Bok.
Let the man talk. So let's talk about the Dybbuk Bok.
Well, here's the thing is, again, for some time I've been reluctant to truly actually embed it in soil. And I have done that recently, and suddenly I get a call from my wife, and the whole backyard is collapsing into a hole. And it's like, okay, what's the chance of that happening? Because we're in the middle of the United States on clay. There is no canyons, there's no springs, there's nothing down there.
Anyway. I think it's mad at you a little bit.
Yeah, I think it wants to bury us for burying it, so I don't know.
I think that maybe you should unbury the Dybbuk Bok and...
And send it to you.
No. I have children. Well, so do you.
No, my kids are finally in college, so it's great.
Okay. Well, yes, I still have a child at home, and he's learning to drive right now, so I don't think I need any of that Dybbuk Bok juju.
Yeah, he needs all the help he can get.
He does.
So here's the story of the Dybbuk Bok. What the Dybbuk Bok is really about is what I've come to kind of see it as. This was created by a person or a family member that was very related to the Holocaust, and family members lost parents, siblings, spouses, children. And in trying to deal with this catastrophe, created this wooden container with familial tokens, hair, a granite prayer stone with a Hebrew on it, obviously a goblet, a candlestick. This was something that she used to focus, I think, her thoughts and prayers to God, as well as to somewhat protect her. And it really was a very personal item. Praying to it and worshiping it or using it for 40 years, her thought was, living up to a grand old age of 103, that when she died, what this was something very personal and be buried with her. The problem was, when she died, she never thought the rabbi would say, I'll bury the old lady, but that Bok thing, no, that's not kosher. I'm Orthodox. The Bok doesn't go in the ground with her. So the family, you know, had the choices to bury her or not. They buried her. What do you do with grandma's junk? And so they just stuck it out on a yard sale, which they said when we finally contacted them, don't you think that was a little bit kind of a bad idea? It's like, well, yeah, in hindsight now, we realized that was kind of not a good thing to do, but we didn't know what else to do with it. And that's when an antique dealer picked it up, thinking it was a nice little knickknack for mom's birthday. He takes it home. She touches it. She goes into the hospital with a stroke and realizes that there's evilness with it. Their whole life and shop and everything just vanishes. And then he decides it's the Bok to get rid of it, gives it to a college kid who thinks it's going to be fun, until he starts basically having illnesses and burning eyes and hair falling out and shadowy things chasing him, and he kind of loses it. And so, of course, I was aware of it, but more just wanting to kind of see it, but not own it. And so a friend of mine basically says, well, look, I could really use this. I'm going to do this little haunted tour, and I want to bring people to my home. But how do you explain if there's a spirit in your home? I said, well, if you have the Dybbuk Bok, you certainly got to have a spirit. But I said, let's just make a mock one. We'll just pretend to create the Bok and call it the Dybbuk Bok. But anyway, in the end, we go ahead and buy it, but he decides he doesn't want it anymore. And then I get ill, I have all these problems, weird things are happening. And so basically, in the end, the only reason I'm hesitant here, by the way, I keep hearing these weird little blops like someone's writing me on Skype, which probably is, but just so you guys know, that's why I keep getting these kind of weird hesitations, because it's like there's like 1,000 messages coming through right now, so don't want to mess this up. Anyway, needless to say, I end up with this thing, and then my life goes to hell in the handbag, so to speak. And so I research it and figure out what it is. I really believe... this prayer she set in motion brings it to Kirksville, where there is actually a tie to Hitler, Germany, and the laws that became the Nuremberg Laws actually originated from a person from this spot who did horrible things and guided the United States down a really dark path because of his own anti-Semitic beliefs. And we followed suit. up until we started seeing what was happening in the concentration camps. And then we realized the errors that we had made. And so that's kind of the story of the Dybbuk box, is why it came here, I think. But I really think it's a prayer box of sorts. So whatever you pray to it actually can happen. That's why I don't want people around it, because bad prayers can happen too, bad wishes. So well, there it is.
So it has, yeah, it has a power, but how do you keep from letting that? I mean, my gosh, if I had a prayer box where I could wish for things, how do you be a good steward of that?
Well, that's why I say it's like the monkey paw. If you know that story, you wish on it, and yeah, you get your wish, but it's not exactly the way you thought it would come out. You know, you wish to see your children again. If they've been in a war and killed, they come right out of the grave as they were, and kind of a little bit ripe. And, you know, it's like, okay, that might not be what you want. And so what I'm saying is, this woman never expected her prayers to come this way. And I think the reason why people kept moving it on, the idea was that if you're not going to find out what I want you to know, then I'm going to make life so unbearable that you'll either get rid of me or something, so I can move on, giving the Dybbuk box its own personality, that I am going to solve my little puzzle here and go on my journey. And if you're not going to help, then I'm going to make life miserable and make you get rid of me. And that's what would have been happening to the box.
See, and I wanted to ask that about the box, because, you know, I do believe that things do hold energy. Do you think it's possible that all of these prayers or these offerings or whatever that this woman was making to the box, the original owner or the creator, do you think that it's a possibility that she, like, instilled her own psychic energy into this thing and it just, for whatever reason, went bad?
Well, that's the thing, is a true Dybbuk is a person with unfinished business, and so she might have found the box as a way to answer her own prayer, mm-hmm, to not just answer it. She probably in death knew what had happened, but nobody else knew. And to me, then, by creating this, I mean, what's the chance of a little artifact in the middle of the Midwest becoming the number one box office hit? And so now everybody is curious as to what is it? And so yeah, the world will know this secret. And so that's pretty powerful. What, yes, would draw the greatest film producer, one of the greatest film producers of Hollywood, to focus on this one item, not only to write the story, but everybody naysayed that it was going to be a flop. A apparition, a movie 2 weeks before, literally didn't make $4 million in weeks. And is literally down at the bottom of the barrel. And this is the number one box office hit. And yet if you looked at them, it's like they seem like the same story. What's going on here? Why is this one successful and this one is just a skunk? It's what I'm saying is, what's the chance of all these weird things happening? But I think it wants the story to be known. And if you read the book, chapter 10, you'll know the story.
Oh, Jason, okay. I'm sorry. I promise I'll download it tonight.
I'll read it too. I'm just stuffed right now.
Jason spent the first half hour when we were trying to get on the air haranguing us about not reading his book. And I actually think that the Dybbuk box is mad at us for that.
I read the book. I read the book.
Cheryl read the book.
Oh, so Cheryl, you should be protecting us then here.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Producer.
So Jason, I have to tell you what's happening while this is all going on, while you're talking.
Okay.
In our chat room, which people listen to the show and chat at the same time, it is doing really weird crap. It's kicking people in and out of the chat room into this alternate chat room where there is nobody and they're isolated and by themselves and there's like no audio, and then all of a sudden for no reason they kick back into this chat room.
<It's like> sliders.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. Go listen to Clyde's Ground Zero. It's like, and he says, this was so great, I'm wondering if I can get Sam Raimi and you guys back on at the end of the month. It's like, are you really nuts? So when I'm coming your show, guys.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, I think you need to unbury the box.
Yeah.
At the rate it's going, it's going to uncover itself if I lose more of my yard. So it's going to exposing itself.
Oh, again. So I want to ask you what you think of the movie. And maybe more importantly, do you get a sense of what the box thinks about the movie? And we're talking, of course, about The Possession.
What I like about the movie is, in the sense that, just as when I got this item, I believed it was everything but the spiritual, because again, that's just not my bag. And so, you know, I'm looking at all of a sudden everybody's hallucinating and choking and burning eyes and shadowy figures. And I'm thinking, okay, they've poisoned themselves. Somebody either on purpose or by accident has contaminated this artifact, and anyone who comes in contact with it, it's bad news. And so, things like cyanide and mercury and arsenic, these are actually used as preservatives in at least 100 years ago. The Mad Hatter, you know, actually, beaver skin hats, they would use mercury, and by hand they would roll the mercury on the beaver hat, and it would make it waterproof and shiny.
And lethal
yeah. Because the mercury would leach into your skin, which is why we had the Mad Hatters. Anybody who worked with hats and preservatives and mercury were poisoning themselves.
I did not know that that's where Mad Hatter came from.
Oh, I just thought he was just insane. But hold on. But, you know, JD, we were talking about it a little bit, that a lot of this stuff that goes on with the box is just, it goes so far beyond random. It's almost like it goes beyond coincidence. You would agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. And like I said, I was thinking about that coming home and statistically, how just so many things have happened that you could actually show causative measures in the statistic analysis of it, that these bad things happen can be directly related to the box. The problem is you can't show why they happen. I mean, you can say, yeah, the box did it, but, you know, the box didn't do it physically. So how did it do it? That's the thing.
String theory, quantum physics, that's how it works.
Right, yeah.
Is that what it is?
It's the Higgs boson. That's what's in the middle of the Dybbuk box.
Oh, my God. So do you think that CERN then is actually making the box more powerful?
There it is. Those damn Europeans.
See, I knew it. You know what? They're going to kill us all with that Large Hadron Collider. I knew it.
I think that it's very important that we pause here for a moment, you guys, because we've been kind of light and we've been kind of laughing, and I think we need to make everyone understand we are not mocking the box.
No, not at all.
No, because you don't, do you, Jason?
No, you really don't. And getting back to that's kind of the thing about it. All these things happen around it. My real instinct is, because I'm not really a spiritual person, was that we need to check this for heavy metals. And you, fortunately, through Canada, you can buy this equipment that will check for arsenic and cyanide and mercury. And I did a very thorough test. My son's a college science major, so you know we did a check and a positive run on it. And he followed every step of the way. He goes, Dad, there is nothing on this box that could be causing this. We did black light because people are like, it's mold. It's like, well, no, because mold or bacteria or anything, black lights would just show it just immediately. And I said, there is literally nothing on it. So absent any contaminant, then what is causing people to have these horrible health issues and hallucinations of sorts, or maybe they're not hallucinations, these flashes and smoky enveloping fires of blackness and all these things that are going on, then what is it? And that's where I started thinking maybe there is something spiritual to this. And that's why I thought, well, now let me find out what the rabbis are thinking. And their attitude was, this is something very holy. You need to put it in acacia, which is the wood of the King Solomon's temples and the wood of God. Put it in gold, because gold was never meant for man. It was something God wanted for him, and God wanted for God. And so if you're enveloping gold in this case, it'll seal it down. Now, the scientists, JD, are screaming, no. It's an electromagnetic field. You've got granites, which have energies. You've got these metals in there, this cup and this iron candlestick. And all of this, even the wood, is interacting, creating an electromagnetic field. What you want to do is, gold is a great conductor, so seal all of this thing in gold and you'll kill the electromagnetic field. And scientifically, so the scientists and the rabbis, for different reasons, said the exact same thing, and that's actually what finally calmed the box. But here's a funny thing. I was in Aberdeen, Scotland a couple days ago, because I do my medical museum lectures, and the entire city is gray and pink granite. And I'd never seen, and it is all built like in the 1800s, but it's so chiseled and perfect because the stone is indestructible. It looks like it was just made yesterday. And as I'm driving with my host through the city, I'm saying, oh my gosh, this is row after row of gorgeous granite houses. And it's like, I've never seen anything like it. And she goes, but there's one problem. I said, well, what's that? She goes, radioactivity. Granite is very radioactive.
Really? I'm thinking,
I didn't know that.
I'm thinking, here's the kid losing all his hair and all these things. So then, there again, maybe the scientists are right. Maybe the damn box is just radioactive, and there could be all the illnesses and the hair loss and the hallucinations. So I'm back to that again. So now I got to get a Geiger counter and shove it in there and see what happens.
Let's say, I mean, you know what? It's not like Nazis or anything opening up the Ark of the Covenant at the end of Indiana Jones, but
it's so beautiful.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, you know what? Listening to all this stuff, I definitely think that there's something to it. I mean, I had my own experience with the box, and there's one thing that I've always wondered about the box is do you think that it could possibly sniff out people that, you know, have a Jewish lineage? My great great grandmother was Jewish, and you know, I'm kind of wondering if it just sort of smells that blood out.
Well, here's the thing is, even though I'm raised Methodist, my family actually one generation ago was in the Czechoslovakia then, now the Czech mm-hmm. Republic, and their name, Hynjny, is actually woodcutter, and it's very likely that it is also a Jewish name from Praha, Prague. And so it doesn't take much. My great-grandmother never learned English, you know, and so I think it's kind of funny that there could be definitely Jewish blood in me based on, you know, we're just, again, a generation or two away from Prague.
Yeah.
So maybe it sniffs us out. I do think it found. I think it truly. When I bid on that box, it truly was. I put a set amount of money, and I had to buy it. Like you have to buy the curse. it's one of those things where you have to willingly accept it with payment. And so when I bought it, or at least put my bid in, there were multiple people who wanted it too. But they reported through emails and stuff that they were literally blocked from bidding, that their computers shut down, or that as a bid, it would not accept their bid, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. And these are real people, and they contacted me later because they felt a great loss. They wanted it. They felt a need for it. And when they didn't get it, it was as if basically being hollow. And they searched the web forever to find out if it'd ever return. And when I started blogging about it, they were relieved that literally they were haunted by this thing and followed up with me. So I think it's kind of funny. The people that wanted it didn't get it, but still couldn't let go of it. So yeah,
well, the box, it's the box chooses you.
Mm-hmm.
So, part of the story that we've never talked to are the college students. Of course, we've talked to you about the college students that bought the box between you and Kevin, the people that you bought the box for. And they seem to have had just terrible, terrible, terrible luck with this box. But do you think that the box chose them, or do you think that they chose the box and it didn't?
Here's the thing is I do think, again, they were chosen first. When it left Portland, Oregon, it came specifically to Kirksville with Truman State University. And the kid that actually had it had parents that were faculty at the school. And so what's ironic about this is the fact that they had the best opportunity when things went bad to figure out that the reason it was in Kirksville was because of a former faculty member of that same school who then went on to the eugenics movement in Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island, and actually became the director of immunization and naturalization and cut off access for Jews in the 19-teens and 20s from coming to America and continued that. He set up the laws in 1919 that sterilized anybody that was epileptic, an orphan, homeless, deaf or blind. I mean, these are not reasons to sterilize people. Cleft palates. Yeah. If you had black, if you had interracial blood, he suggested that you sterilize yourself and not because you weren't pure. And so he was actually creating through laws of Congress and his bogus research.
Eugenics.
And a national America. Hitler was in jail, and when his failed, he had a little uprising. Here's the thing is, his first group was a bunch of beer drinkers in a beer hall. He was a hero of the war. He had this group of 800 to 1,000 men in his beer hall. And at night, when they're all drunk, they followed him. But the next day, when he actually tried to have a riot, they were worthless. So when he got thrown in prison for 8 years for a failed coup against the political system, he's sitting there thinking, well, that was stupid. You take a bunch of drunks, and this is what you get, 8 years in prison. Right. Where can I find power? And he looked to America and said, there it is. They're becoming a national country. And look at the laws on immigration, on marriage, on sterilizing what are considered the imbeciles and the dullards. And he basically wrote to this man and created the Nuremberg laws verbatim in the 30s from American laws in the 19-teens and 20s. And these laws of sterilization were on the books till 1969. 3 weeks ago, North Carolina finally said, enough. We're apologizing on what few people who were sterilized still in the 60s, 1960s, we're going to give them $50,000 because there are only a few of them left, and we've got to do something. It's not; it doesn't even pay for not having a family. For those of you that have kids, I mean, seriously, not ever be able to have that.
Yeah.
The idea of that is just horrifying. I mean, considering the fact how our son was born, he was born through in vitro fertilization, and it's like, you know, they would have told us to sterilize ourselves if we can't have, you know, pure kids or whatever. But, you know, it's like, I never even knew this, Jason. And I mean, this is like horrifying to me.
Well, it gets better. This person who is from Kirksville ended up receiving, an honorary medical degree from Hitler himself, Heidelberg. I mean, he was in there working side by side with the Nazis. When the Nazis created the film about the Juden rat and that it was the genetic Jews that were causing the problems, and this was a German propaganda film, he translated it to English and was showing it at the high schools and churches. And that's when the Carnegies and the Rockefellers go, whoa. I think we've just figured out what the problem is here. This guy is basically anti-Semitic. So they pulled his grant funds. They basically killed the eugenic movements in America. He gathers up all of his research, comes back home to Kirksville, and builds his mansion. But here's the funny thing. He becomes a latent epileptic. He is actually the white trash that he is sterilizing. And you could be sterilized with no defense. You literally can be taken and you have no defense. You cannot protect yourself. If the government deems you as basically poor stock, you basically get sterilized. He is now one of those people. All of his eugenic friends leave him. He goes into basically an illness that for 2 years, there is nothing, even though his brother is the president of a medical university, the finest in the nation. They cannot do anything for him 2 years, and he dies in a massive heart attack. Now, here's the story of the Dybbuk.
Oh, well, he deserved it.
Well, here's the thing, karma. But a Dybbuk, if you've done bad, you cannot have a rest unless you undo the bad. For all we know, the Dybbuk of this box could be this person actually highlighting his own ills, his own horrible deeds, in order to find peace. And that's why it's at a worldwide millions of people level from a silly little box in Kirksville.
Wow. So I have to tell you, Jason, I've had some friends who have been very eager for this show because they ask me lots of questions about the box, and I always say, well, we're going to talk to Jason again. And so they're asking me questions in chat. And so Patty wanted to know if there's any connection other than the garage sale connection between Kevin and the family.
I think there is. Actually, after the book was written, I was contacted by someone who heard about it because there was a show in Portland, Oregon that, my gosh, there's this book out and it's about us. And this woman wrote back and she said, look, I know that family. I worked with them in a secretarial role for years. And there's more to this story in the sense of, and that's where I have kind of thing is, I think there's something, but I don't think it'll ever be told. But I think there's more there than we're ever going to find out. But what I'm saying is no Jewish museum, no rabbi, no Kabbalah priest doubts that this object is Jewish made and Jewish. It's not typical. It's not something in normal practice, but people interpret their religion all the time in bizarre ways. I mean, You know, just because you're Catholic and you hear the priest say something about, you know, worshiping God, and you go create your little shrine in your house and you fill it with the stuff, he might come over and be horrified about what you've done. It's like, what's what you told me to do? It's like, I didn't tell you to do that.
Right.
And that's what this might be about. They might be feeling that they're a good Jewish practitioner. In all reality, some priest is going, or rabbi is going, what is that? And get rid of that. It's like, but it's what you told me to do. It's what I... That's what I've been understanding I'm supposed to do. It's like, no, you're not supposed to do that. So what I'm saying is nobody doubts it's Jewish, but there is this kind of something is missing in the story.
Yes.
And yet nobody doubts the power of it, because that's what this woman said. It's a very mystical, very powerful family from grandma on down. And do not doubt that. And I can't tell her story without her permission, but it's just like she is. Do not doubt it. And she goes, myself, just a Christian working in that atmosphere. They're good people, but trust me, there was a lot going on there that was scary. Scary mysticism, scary.
Well, I was going to say, it's a really good possibility that they were somehow using some kind of magical arts, perhaps.
That's actually one of the theories that the person, Patty, who asked that question is one of the things she's really curious about, is she, because she's a practitioner of Santeria, which is a form of Wiccanism, I believe.
Yeah.
And she feels looking at what's in the box and the objects and everything else, that there must be some kind of magical practices associated.
And that there's actually a second one that is the sister. And there's no doubt. Yeah. When I look at the second one, it's not the same, but there is a motif, a symbolic match down to it's a different prayer, but it's put in the same. I mean, what I'm saying, there's go to the Ground Zero and you can actually see images of the second box with Kevin. And you very much feel that there is a connection of these two. And that's what I'm saying, is there's something more to this story, but we may never know it, to be honest.
Right, right. Mm. And then Rob wanted to know about the box. Do you have to be in its presence for it to do these things? Or can it just randomly pick somebody across the country and, I don't know, send like a tornado to them, or give them the Rocky Mountain spotted fever or something like that?
I think twice... Twice events have happened on the other side of the world. And let me tell you one of those. One was Leah Ramesses, which is, she's an Australian psychic. And she wanted me to do EVP with the Dybbuk box. And I thought, okay, I've never done this, but I'll try. I did basically a Jewish prayer before I started the EVP. And then I smudged, which is taking sage and basically circling the box until it's just in a haze of sage smoke. Simultaneously, on the other side of the world, in their house, it filled with sage. They thought their house was on fire, and they didn't know what was going on. They didn't know when I was going to do this. It was just like, please do this. And what we discovered was, simultaneously, when I was doing this on one end of the world, it was actually almost like a portal coming out on the other end of their house, because it was their request. And they literally had hoses out. They were frantic that their house was burning down. And then when all the smoke cleared around the Dybbuk box and I finished the EVP, so did it clear at their house. And that's a story if you go to, I forget what their show is, but it's the Ramesses in the Australian Paranormal. On another case, Ben Grundy and Aaron Wright of Mysterious Universe, they wanted to do a show, and we were about 2 weeks out. Now, of course, Australia, again, it's the same place. They've been having a horrible drought. This was actually 2 years ago when they did the show. And I said, by the way, I'm getting vibes from the Dybbuk box that tell me, be prepared during the show for rain. And it's like, oh, well, it's a drought. Well, we need rain. I said, no, you don't understand. We're talking monsoon rain. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, in 2 weeks we're going to have a monsoon. I said, yeah, right there. And they said, well, we'd welcome it, but it ain't going to happen. 5 minutes before the show started to show, there literally was hit with this torrential rain, washing cars away. They couldn't get into their building. I mean, all this stuff was happening. It literally rained on their show the entire interview. And as soon as the interview was over, it stopped and went out to sea. It basically was a storm over them. They're believers, trust me. And I have to say, it's the weirdest thing. Their whole building is shut down. No explanation. It's like, get ready because you're going to have trouble. They literally lost the entire building's electricity. No explanation. Soon as we're done, everything comes back on. So.
Oh my goodness! Well, so you know,
I think I think it can affect anywhere. You know.
Yeah, well, and I've got to say, I don't know, JD, you've had your own experiences with the box, and you've kind of laughed and said, no, I don't really believe it. And I want to know if you've changed that or not.
That's a tough question, and I kind of knew that was going to be asked in some form. All I can say is...
Choose your words carefully, JD.
Yes, I will not mock the box out of respect, okay? Just put it that way. Out of respect.
No. Mainstream science speaks wisely for once.
That's right. There you go. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. So it's just one of those things, believe me.
Well, let me give you a few stories that are news stories. And one of them is we've had a stray dog, which we loved. Name's Poopsie, but we called her Poops, which I think is a great dog name. Poops is a great dog name.
It is, because that's pretty much what they do.
Yeah, she answered to Poopsie, and then we just shortened it to Poops. And she really was a very loyal dog. And a couple years, basically a year ago, we needed to do some shots for the book. And so we don't usually get the Dybbuk box out, but my son and I got the laborious task of getting it out of the metal case, out of the military case, out of the ark. And we got in there, and we were shooting pictures of it. And she noticed that we were in the den, and she's kind of curious. And so she kind of pads on into there, and we have it open. And she walks right up into it and sticks her nose right inside the Dybbuk box. And there is this unusual scent that, since it's been trapped in the acacia ark, it is this pleasing, almost addictive odor that almost like it wants to get out. And what my son says is that it's been producing this odor for 5 years, and it keeps getting stronger. And in all science, it should be dissipating. It shouldn't be growing, but it's growing. And all of a sudden, the dog yelped as if someone had just kicked her. And she started panting and gets that wild-eyed look, and she's trying to get away from it. And the harder she tries, she's just spinning because she can't, you know, again, her freaking out is causing her not to just walk off. And finally she gets away from it and goes down to her bed and just stares at it, never comes back up into the den. But what's really odd about this is she then starts to age rapidly, and within a few months she's completely crippled. And this is a very healthy, very dog go on walks, and she's like one of those, just like a little machine. Her little feet just move in perfect sync. She basically just becomes an invalid, and sadly we had to put her out. And I thought that was strange. A month before that happened, we had some friends that the guy is a brain surgeon. Of course, I work at a medical school, so we meet people like this. His wife is a pediatrics oncologist, so she deals with kids with cancer. I mean, my gosh, these two brilliant people we've known for 20 years as friends. Because he's Indian, his folks live with them, and they take care of the kids, kind of like, you know, the Indian family. And so they begged and begged and begged to see the Dybbuk box. And I thought, you know, I really don't want to get it out. But they're really close friends. And so I said, fine, we'll get it out. Well, the father of the brain surgeon, you know, comes up upon it, and we open it up. And he starts getting really agitated. And he goes, I've got to go upstairs. I've got to get my wife. I'll be right back. And he runs upstairs, and she's in bed already. It's like, you know, 10:30, 11 at night. She comes down in her sari with her bindi, got her ruby in the middle of her forehead. She's kind of dazed a little bit. And it's like, you've got to come down here. You've got to come down here. You know, before they put it away, get down here. And she's standing there, and it's like, open it. So I open up the ark and open up the Dybbuk box. And she herself starts to cry. And it's like, are you all right? She goes, my mother was a spiritualist in the Indian faith, and she could call spirits. She would literally rub her palm with her fingers. And as she would rub and concentrate and call to the spirits, this white ash would form. And the scent of that ash is the same as what's coming out of the Dybbuk box. I haven't smelled it in decades. And only when I was with her. And she goes, it's just very emotional right now. I thought, okay, that's freaky. Let's shut the thing up.
Yeah, from what I understand, though, that people have tested that holy ash, and they're like, well, we don't know what this is or where this even comes from.
No, but the scent of the holy ash is similar to what comes out of the Dybbuk box.
Yeah.
Spirit. Pure spirit.
Yeah.
A little bit of radioactivity.
Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a break. And because we, you know, have a few ads that we need to run, and we obviously are having a little bit of trouble. And then when we come back, Jason, we can talk about Paranormal Witness, which I really enjoyed watching. Yeah. We can talk about the movie a little more. We can talk about your book, all sorts of stuff. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around, guys.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Thank you. Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency on ZTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalkRadio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. We're also joined by J.D. Harrison as a third wheel, and we have been having an outstanding conversation.
Not a third wheel.
He's playing third banana to our first and second. and we also welcome back as well Jason Haxton, who is author of The Dybbuk Box, as well as being the keeper of The Dybbuk Box, and doing an outstanding job at it, I might say. You know, thanks, Jason, for, sticking around for a little bit longer, even though we had those technical difficulties at first, but, we pulled it together.
It happens with every show, so I feel kind of guilty. We've taped entire shows and gotten done going, wow, that was a great show. And it's like, oh my gosh, nothing recorded. It's
Well, I will tell you, at the top of the show, when we were having our difficulties and we couldn't get on the air, I said, I can just record this and we can play it later. And Jason was going to tell us a story, and I hit record, and my trusty recorder, which works every time I ever record anything, refused to work. It wouldn't work.
And many curse words were said.
I did not drop an F-bomb. So, J.D., we brought you on because of your great love of the Dybbuk Box and your total lack of fear of it and your total respect for it. So, I'm sure you have stuff that you'd like to talk to Jason about for a bit.
Okay. Jason?
Yeah?
And the Dybbuk Box.
J.D.
The last time we talked, I was pretty skeptical. And I'm not saying that that's changed much, and I'm not saying that I totally disbelieve, but I don't totally believe, and I don't totally disbelieve. All I can say is, like we talked earlier, there seems to be a lot of things with a lot of people associated with this box. And it can be shown statistically. You could show it in. You could show that, when this box is around, these things happen. What is up with that? And I know you explained that and there's different things, and maybe the whole process isn't quite understood, but you hit on it earlier when you said spiritual. Okay. And we know in paranormal that it's the whole goal is to prove that side of what is the paranormal, to quantify the spiritual, see what it is so that it can be measured, weighed, that type of thing. But, I really don't know what to say about it. I'm not going to say anything bad. I promise you that.
So. Jason, have you noticed a ramping up of JD's respect over the years?
I think since that last storm, he's coming down nicely.
JD, how are those boils from the last time coming along, buddy?
I don't.
It sounds like, the plague of Egypt. It's like, it's like, is that sirens in the background, guys? It's like, yeah, it's JD's house.
Start with?
No, that's just the firstborn dying in JD's
name. Why
JD? Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
That's
and
right.
Everything else right after it. And it was just.
It was crazy.
It was nuts. Really, yeah, it was nuts.
You started to get like almost, you also, because you and I were talking quite a bit at the time because you were homesick constantly.
Right.
And you started to, your personality changed. You started to get depressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why JD, Jason?
Because he's a scientist. You guys are already somewhat respectful. He had to be beaten down and molded just a little bit more.
Much slap me around a little bit.
I actually have to tell you, this is a supreme act of bravery on JD's part, because we said, we asked if he was going to watch The Paranormal Witness, and he said, yeah, I will. And then, are you going to come to the show? And there, it wasn't without hesitation that he agreed.
I'm glad to have JD back, though. It makes for a good show.
Very sheepish.
Glad to be here, but yeah, I am. When it comes to that,
And getting back to it, I don't think the Dybbuk Box is necessarily bad. I think if it wasn't moved on its way, that's what caused things to happen, to activate people to get rid of it so that someone who would act would do something. And that's what I realized when I looked back and said, look, the family had it, Kevin had it, the college kids had it, and they all got rid of it, and none of them were better because of it. And I thought, you know, the last thing I want to do is lose control. And almost there's somewhat of a regret that they didn't have it. It's kind of like a love-hate relationship. And so I thought, the last thing I want to do is get rid of it before I even know what it is. And so you lose control like that. And so that's why I stuck with it, in spite of a lot of problems. But just as many people have benefited from the Dybbuk box. And one of them, who was my biggest help, was Rebecca Endry, who was a gal in Brooklyn, New York. Her father was a Kabbalist priest, and he's quite good from what she said, had his own esoteric book, and was really a healer, and people would come to him. But he became so entrenched in this other world that he forgot he had a real family, a secular family in this world, and he was removed. And then when he passed, she basically never had a father figured. And when she heard about the Dybbuk box, she was reminded of this horrible kind of childhood of what was happening, and yet she was drawn to understand it. And in the process, she had a lot of healing, of understanding her father, of picking herself up, going back to school, and really becoming the full person she needed to be. So I'm saying that in some ways, the Dybbuk box has guided people on a very positive track. And right. So I don't think it's good or bad. I think it's just how you choose to perceive it.
Right.
You know, to me, though, it sounds like it's the Incredible Hulk of the spirit world. You know, as Bruce Banner, it's totally cool and everything, and you're just, you know, just sitting there. But when, it, you know, you piss it off and it's a Hulk, it just really turns your life into a mess. And, I mean, that's what it seems like to me almost.
Well, it's really funny because when we talk about it, and I've noticed myself doing this very many times, we're very much personifying this box. Right. Is that an appropriate response to it, or is that making it smaller than it is, or is it, do you know what I'm asking?
Well, Dybbuk is really a soul of a real person that we don't necessarily know who that person is. And so it is, personification seems pretty natural.
Okay.
Right. And if the woman that created it, like Jason said, actually prayed to it all those years, she personified it.
Mm. You know, that residual energy. I mean, look at
psychic energy to it.
Right. I mean, we pop a video in, of course, in the old days, and all that is iron filings, and yet there is everything as if it's happening again. And so it's no different than, you know, certain granites or soils where battles have occurred. They've absorbed that energy, and it's almost like they re-spit it out. If a piece of plastic with some metal on it can make you believe the person's there, why can't the ground where a battle has occurred do the exact same thing and replay this thing over and over and over again? So.
But this is a little wooden box with a Shema, isn't it? The Shema that's carved on the back.
Right.
And
the
prayer
of God, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just a small little wooden box. It's not a great big huge slab of granite. And it's not a...
But it's got four pieces of granite.
15th century English castle or something.
But it's got four granites in it. And as we know, granite holds energy. And the thing about granite is if you hit it with a hammer, actually more energy might come out than went in. And that's the unique thing of why we use quartz watches and stuff. It holds energy.
So. Oh, my God, you just gave me a great idea. Next time there's this really haunted place I go and it's got a lot of granite, I'm taking my hammer next time. I'm just going to sit there and bash it.
Ping it, ping it. Tinka tinka tink.
Isn't that a good idea? You'll see me out there pounding on a piece of rock to see if I can get something to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of theories of the paranormal where things like lightning storms increase the energy. Have you found anything other than, you know, burying it and making it mad or mocking it or anything that makes its energy stronger?
The Long Island Paranormal Research president begged me to send him a piece when I first got it, just something out of the Dybbuk box to remove it and send it to him. He had relocated, I think, in North Carolina or Ashland area, and he really, really, really wanted. And I thought, you know, whatever, why not send him, you know, something, either a lock of the hair or the candlestick, one item, and then have him send it back. And he was really vehement about getting this. I was like, yeah, I thought fine. I said, yeah, I'll do it. But then all of a sudden, what happened over our area, over basically my home, was this storm appeared, but there was no rain. It was an electrical storm that went on for 4 or 5 days. And so was going out to the Amish, which were our neighbors, to to tell them or do something or have them do some work. And they were out there freaking out. They're saying something isn't right. And it's like, what do you mean? It's like, this has been going on, that there's something, and lightning is hitting around us, but there's no storm. And it's like, it's time to get away from this area. This is just not right. And that's when I said, look, I called him up and said, I'm not sending you any of this. I said, there's something wrong. He's like, please, please send it. And that's when we had hurricane after hurricane after hurricane ripped through Florida, four in a row, and they kept going right to this guy's house up in the Carolinas. And finally, his entire street was underwater. I said, do you get it? I'm not sending you anything out of it. And it was just like, I said, you're evacuating your home, the entire area. I said, we've suffered these storms here. I've convinced, I'm not going to do it. And that was it. I've never even thought of taking anything out of it again.
It's certainly very good at making its will known, huh?
But here's the weird thing about that. During those hurricanes, that's when it felled the acacia tree. Because to make the ark, it took one tree, the boards. So we needed a 50-year-old tree. And one of the Jewish families that had survived the Holocaust planted and grew this tree after the war, and these hurricanes took it down. So the tree was no value. People just let anybody who wanted, like the mill, the people who do the wood mill work, basically took it for free and thought, oh my gosh, here's a rare wood. He sliced into boards, but ironically, because it grew in Florida, it had air pockets and therefore was had no value. So after basically putting it in the mill for 2 years to dry it out, he thought he would make hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Nobody wanted it. So I bought the entire tree for $100, and he shipped it for $50, and that became the Acacia Ark. So what's ironic is these connections of, you know, this guy wanting it, I'm not going to send it, these hurricanes going through, and it's the very hurricane that took down the tree that became the Ark.
Sure. You know, it's very clear to me that the Dybbuk box has changed you. And I'd like to know if you can put into words how it has changed you, like the most significant thing. Why Jason Haxton? What is it about you that, why is this in your life?
I think that prior to this item, I was pretty pragmatic in that we live a good life, we eat, drink, we be merry, and then we die and it's dark, big deal. And that wasn't a bad thing. But I guess in researching the various religions and even some great people that had to do with kind of like Gandhi and actually the father of our medicine here at our medical school, they were very giving people who truly thought that this was a journey, and what we absorbed, we took with us to the next part of our life, which was, this was just a giant placenta that we're living in, this forest of matter of, you know, we're just choking in it, but it actually is what's growing us to take with us. Even our conversation tonight, the people listening, will take us to this next realm. So I think that I've become very spiritual, and I believe very much that there is an afterlife, which I don't think I would have said that 10 years ago before the Dybbuk box. I would have actually scoffed and poo-pooed it and said, it doesn't matter. And now it's like, no, I'm very serious. I know it's going to happen, and I need to prepare in this journey. And so all these things are connected. And so I would not change owning it, except even for the bad stuff in the book that you read. It's the outcome at the end that I talk about, that this was a very spiritual journey. And that to me is where I benefited, and others have come in and benefited from it. So,
well, you know, I believe that in Judaism, there is it might be a saying even, that you have the bitter with the sweet. And that's one of the customs, is that they take the bitter herbs because, and so it sounds like that's very much what you're saying, is that, yes, there's bitter, but ultimately it's sweet.
Well, and here's how some people describe it. You can be in pain from sitting around and your body's basically, your muscles basically just go to goo and stuff. Or you can be in pain from working out. But which pain do you prefer? You're going to have pain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about the movie. So what... you like the movie. How about the box?
I think the movie was well done. I think having a Danish director, he brings an element to it that I think gives us a different way of seeing horror, which is, I think, why it's number one in the box office. And actually getting to go and meet the people in the movie, including the famous Sam Raimi. It was very interesting to be with him because he himself is scared to death of the Dybbuk box, and he makes no qualms about that. Go on the Google him. It's like, I paid to have a replica made to raise the money because I didn't want, and nor did the actors want to be near the real thing, just in case. And so in that sense, you know, and they had things happen on the set, exploding lights, fires, mysterious things. So they're very respectful of the Dybbuk box. But what I liked about Sam Raimi is, because he's a very quiet, I think a very thoughtful person, is that he feels that there's so much more to be told about this story. And before it even came out, had the confidence in it for sequels. And he was talking to the Lionsgate, you know, CEO and saying, I wanted money for the sequels before even the movie came out. And he's like, why am I going to give you money? We don't even know if this is a success. And yet it's, now that it's doing well, I've been hearing on MTV interviews and stuff, Sam saying that, you know, not only could there be a sequel, but there could be sequels. There is so much to the story that is yet to be told. And I would love to work with him and truly create some of the stories that that hasn't even been written in the book. I mean, they limited me to 200 pages, my publisher. I could have written 600. So many people were left out. So many things were left out. I've got 9 linear feet of research of things we could talk about that would have just scratched the surface.
Wow.
See, you know what? But you know what bothers me a lot about with Hollywood and anything that, you know, is paranormal? Hollywood tends to drop the ball so many times on the subject matter. Now, you know, you as the caretaker and you as the author of the book, do you fear that kind of thing happening, just a cheapening of the story?
Not with Sam Raimi, because he actually had 3 scripts written, and the first 2 were not bad, by Sisko and Evan Katz. These are great screenplay writers, and they were crushed to spend an entire year of their life, and nobody gets to see the result of that. But that's how picky, and the money, this is from a guy who I think is pretty tight with money, but he actually had the famous Moira Buffini, London playwright, write the first script, and still was like, it's not good enough. It's not as scary as the eBay listing and the research that Jason's done. And so he literally went through 3 scripts, and in this case, money was no issue. And he really went to get actors that, like Mattis Yahu, who has a Hasidic background and has a following of people and a love of everyone. They really went through, and I think took the time to do it right. Even the, you know, going with someone who truly, like Ole Bernadal, who really has told great stories about people. And so in that case, I really have a lot of faith and trust in Raimi. Maybe no one else, but in him, if he does it, it'll be done right.
Great. Right. Yeah. So switching gears a little bit, of course, the Dybbuk box was also just featured on Paranormal Witness last Wednesday, and it's still available on demand if you have like Comcast or whatever your cable is. You should be able to see it on demand. It's well worth watching. I really enjoyed it. I felt like it told the story well. And what did you think? And was there any fallout when you were filming that?
Not really. Again, the Raw TV, which is the London-based group, I actually met them while I was doing some work in the medical museum field while I was in London, and really had a great faith in them. And when I saw how they put this, I knew this would be their best show of the season. I have no doubt. I mean, I've watched the others, and I think they're good. But I think particularly this show rang a chord with them that they were not going to get it wrong. And to actually be able to, and they said it's a miracle to bring in 5 different people and the consistency of the story and no one in the same room telling this as if it was a continued story across the board, that it impacted them a lot. And I have to say, even though I researched the book, I had never met, like Ida Manis, who touched the box and had the stroke, I talked to her on the phone, but I'd never even seen an image of her until I saw her there. And it was scary to that. The shopkeeper, Jane, who, you know, hovered in the corner and then ran out and never came back. She's a real person and convincing about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so as I looked at these things, I thought they did a great job with the show itself. And it is actually, as I truly believe it to be, they changed chronologically a little bit at the end that we're, but it doesn't change the story that they kind of like when I contacted Kevin, I contacted him long before some of the things that really got out of control with me, but then they continued to stay out of control, and that's when he told me the story of Havilah. So in that case, it was a little bit out of sequence, but the way they told it, for the average person, probably would bring it together and more clarify it. And I'm okay with that artistic license, because it really isn't, it's not a deal breaker, and it makes it easier to understand for someone who doesn't read the whole story. And obviously gaps had to be left. So it told a better story the way they laid it out. And it's still accurate.
Right. Well, and I have to tell you, Kevin Manis's mother, Ida, that's her name. Mm-hmm. She absolutely was haunting in that. No pun intended. I mean, she was just, it was, she haunted me watching her, and her, she was incredibly believable, is what I'm saying. So,
and I've heard from people that know her that she is truly spiritual in a way that is beyond most of us. And I have to say that, you know, seeing her and knowing her all these years, she's never wanted that Dybbuk box anywhere near them. She wants the protection of her family and child. And as Kevin, as a young person, sees possibility, she from the beginning was, get rid of it, get it out. What about Hollywood? Aren't you proud? I hate it. I don't want anything to do with it. She's the true mystic in this, in the fact that, you know, we need to do what's right to get rid of this and forget about anything else. Don't go down the wrong trail with it. And she has always been sincere on that. And I saw that in the story, too.
And she recognized, boy, she knew what it was the second she laid eyes on it, it seems.
Mm-hmm. The potential.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Well, I have to tell you, I, one night, shortly after I talked to you the first time, I sat at a party and told the story of the Dybbuk box. And of course, it wasn't well known then. And I had people asking me questions for like an hour and a half. It was like I was doing your interview for you. Just, it was, so people are, do you find the level of fascination with this? Are you surprised at the level of fascination?
I've never heard anyone, I mean, if you just begin the story, who is not completely enraptured in it and wants to know everything they can about it. And that's what I said. I've made friends with, metallurgists who are for NASA. I mean, these are true scientists that really look at crystals and metals and how to use them in space. Again, what I'm saying is people that you pick up, they tie into the story and then they share it. It's not enough just to hear it, but it almost is this, it's almost like a story around the campfire, you know, and that we're these so primitive humanoids, and yet we're enthralled by this, and we come together over this story, and it really is, that's how I try to tell it. As it was happening, the reason I think the book is good is I went back to my journals, because I've been keeping journals for 22 years. I never expected to find the box or have the box. And so you really hear the story as it played out, even with me not knowing what was next. And I think that's what makes the story a little bit enjoyable to read, is that you're just getting it as I was getting it. And so you don't know till the end. Yeah. And so it's very much alive and fresh.
Right, and the book is just called The Dybbuk Box. I mean, it's The Dybbuk Box by Jason Haxton, and it's available pretty much everywhere, isn't it? And you said it's on iBooks. And
it's the Kindle, it's iTunes, it's on Amazon, it's on the different, all the different main companies, you know. So
okay.
The best way to buy it, though, I would say, is through the website. If you go to www.dybbukbox.com, because the money goes to a university and it keeps basically intellectual research and books being published. So you get it the cheapest and they ship it for free, and every penny you spend actually goes towards a university. And so that's why I recommend going to the dybbukbox.com site and buying it in the upper left-hand corner. So,
and it's because it is often spelled in other ways. How do you have the website spelled?
The website is www.dibbukbox.com. Dybbuk sometimes is spelled with a Y because there's no true Hebrew translation. It could be I or Y, but the more common is the Y. I spell it with the I, and that's why it comes out unique. And it's now at 500,000 website hits if you do a Google search on Dibbukbox. And I guess I've now taken over the word, because at one time it didn't matter that I was doing my research. Now anything Dybbuk is basically this box.
That's right. It comes. It all comes back to you, and you've been so generous in being on our show so many times that I understand that within a few clicks, it also comes back to us. So. And we, Cheryl, do you have any idea which issue was the Dybbuk Box issue?
I do. I just had it up online too. I think it was May. Now, give me a second. I think it was May 2009, but I have it linked on our homepage, so I'm just going to click it real quick, and I will have the answer to you. It was, where are you? By clicking here. Let's see. May 2009, yes.
Yes, and Jason, I think, is this your fourth or fifth time you've been with us, including you were when we went to the live radio format from the podcast, because we had you on the podcast, and you were our very first guest when we started here 2.5 years ago on Z-Talk Radio.
Well, and here's the funny thing is, and I think I was, I thought there was a lot of fun, but there also is that Dark Matters. There was a brief mention of the Dybbuk Box, and they went off for a year. The same with MU. Actually, Ben Grundy did the interview with me, and his system and everything in his world completely collapsed, and he was out for almost an entire year. And still, people have me back.
I was going to say, this is our fourth time.
That's flyer.
Fourth time, Karen, with Jason.
So this is your fourth time, plus featured in the magazine. Plus so magazine. That's your fifth time.
Yeah.
And I have to say that aside from the book, that magazine, I think, is the best documentation and reference for the Dybbuk Box. So you've done a beautiful job, even showing how it looks in its Acacia Arc.
Yeah, it was you just, like I say, you've always been tremendously generous, and I always get really excited when we're going to talk to you, and I know that JD likes you a lot, but he may be slightly more apprehensive.
I was a little bit tonight.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, okay, so everybody, if you want to find Jason's book, it's Dybbuk, D-I-B-B-U-K box.com.
Hey, and Karen? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to say, I personally recommend that people pick up this book and read it. I've read it. And actually, it has opened up a few more questions, but...
Do you want to ask any of them?
He actually covered a whole lot of them tonight, but, I mean, as I typed in our chat window, my question is the box really all that bad? You know?
And that's the question. And when I began... You know, I tell you, it's a magical, energized piece, or it's a hoax. I really don't think it's a hoax in that sense. I think some of the information is yet to be discovered, and that's what I mean by hoax, is that it's not known yet.
Right.
But actually, I don't think it's good or bad. What I'm saying is I truly think it's whatever energy you put into it. It's, I think, a transmitter and a magnifier. Yeah. And that's why these coincidences happen, good and bad, for people. And if you fear it, it will feed on that like the Hulk and go nuts on you. If you come with it with peace, it will fill you and help you. So...
Gotcha. See, and so I'd like to point out, I would now like to point the finger of blame at Rick and JD for our earlier technical problems because they were afraid.
There you go.
Because I love the Dybbuk Box. I think this box is awesome.
Good, it's coming in the mail. Now that my yard is falling into a giant hole, I have no need for it.
You
Karen,
do
it's
not
coming
know
your way.
My address. Nobody give it to him.
It's the internet.
Karen,
trust me, I can find you. It's the internet. Jesus.
Yeah, that's probably...
Stay online after the show, Jason.
Oh, that's probably true. Well, yeah, but Rick, if he sends it to me, where do you think it's coming next?
Oh, yeah, I forgot you sent baby clothes to my little guy when he was first born. Oh, man.
So, Jason, thank you so much. Like I said, I took 6 weeks off, maybe a little longer, and I am just thrilled that we got to talk about this again and that this was my first show back. Like I say, I stopped talking, mostly, to heal my voice after my Bigfoot doodle so that I could talk to you.
Good for you. I'm glad it was worth it, Karen.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, it really was.
You can come back anytime, Jason.
So, Karen, I think I cut you off. Where can they find Jason's book?
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's pretty much anywhere. You can go to Amazon.com. You can go to DybbukBox.com, DybbukBox.com. It's on iBooks. It's on Kindle. So pick it up and read it. I have to admit I haven't, but as soon as I get offline here, I'm going to download it.
And here's what's really weird, Karen, on that. The American Library Association and Forward Magazine actually identified it as basically a contender as a book of the year. Which is like, this is like your libraries for the nation. And I thought, well, that's really kind of a huge compliment. And mostly on Amazon, you'll find that people give it stellar across. People say, it wasn't what I thought it was, and then I couldn't put it down. So I'm glad, because I would hate for people to spend money on something they hated. And the fact that I think people do enjoy it builds my confidence a little bit, because I never said I was a writer, but I'm glad it seems to work for people.
Oh, I love the story. I really do. It's, you know, there are very few stories that I'm really super drawn to, and the Dybbuk Box is one that I love telling, I love hearing more about, and I love it when you find new stuff and you let us know, and, you know, we get to talk again.
Cool. Well, thanks, and thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks,
Jason. Thank you, Jason.
Jason Haxton, everybody, pick up that book. It's The Dybbuk Box by Jason Haxton. You can find it pretty much anywhere. So, JD, you made it through. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have sense of calm.
Yeah,
I
so
really
you've taken,
do.
You've taken your tinfoil hat off, and you feel like you've come to some closure with the box.
I think so. Yeah.
Good. Rick.
I feel okay about it.
Rick, you're all right.
Yeah, you know what? I will say this though. I do respect it, only because I do feel that it is a very spiritual object, and that it should be respected. And I respect the spiritual side of life. So
that's right.
You know.
I agree. And Cheryl is, I think Cheryl's on the same page as me. Cheryl's a lot like me. It's a fascination, but not, you're not really, it doesn't really make you nervous. You just get kind of excited about it, right, Cheryl?
Yeah. I'll have to admit, when I first heard about it, I got a little nervous. But after reading up on it,
first time,
reading the
Chad
book,
was like,
all that
we were
stuff.
Going on the air with Jason, he's like, should we say a prayer or something?
Seriously. Yeah, but these days, I think I'm with you, Karen, and I am so glad we finally made it on the air tonight. We've never had a 40-minute delay that I've ever can think of,
but we
made it, and we got to talk to Jason, and I'm so glad. So
did
happy.
You drop an F-bomb?
I could have swore you said the F
word.
Who said the F word? Me?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
No. I did not drop an F bomb.
That totally eliminates my F bomb.
Oh my gosh, I did not. I'm going to replay this later. I did not drop an F bomb.
Maybe it was Boppy.
It sounded like you did.
Boppy.
Maybe it was Boppy. Boppy's dropping F bombs, making it sound like you.
I did not. I promise you, I did not drop it. No.
All right. So, everybody, I am really glad to be back. I have missed the show. And, you know, my kiddo is mostly driving now, so it was time well spent. And who do we have next week?
We have next week, September 13th, Robbie Thomas, a psychic profiler and author of the book Time Shift the Paradigm, is going to be talking with us. Mm-hmm. And the week after, we have Kimberly Brulé or Bruletti. Not sure which one. And Chris Matheny from the Research Institute of the Paranormal will be with us.
All right. Very good. And hopefully we'll get Jason back on as well, you know, in the near future. Hey,
yeah,
if you guys haven't seen that Paranormal Witness, it's really worthwhile. You can watch it on demand. Or the other thing is you can go to Amazon and for like $1.99, you can watch a TV show that you missed. It's really worth it. It's great to put a face to Jason. It's great to put a face to Kevin Manis and to see these people tell their stories, because it's real different than hearing about it when you see the emotion on their face. And it's really, I thought it was fantastic. So
is anyone here going to see The Possession?
I probably will at some point.
I will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm going to wait till it comes out on Redbox.
Me too.
Yeah, I will at some point, because, as you know, I love me some Dybbuk Box.
Yeah.
All right, and so with that, we are just about ready to wind it up. Come back next week. I will still be here unless I do something to my voice, and you just never know.
No Bigfoot calls.
Because
I do stupid things. JD, thank you so much for coming and talking to Jason and facing your nervousness.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Jason, good to talk with you again. Sorry I was so quiet, but I was taking a lot in. That's all.
Thanks, JD.
All right, everybody. So next week, same time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in what, Rick?
The flyover states.
That's right. Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio will be back next week. Good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
If you
you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.